All right, so are you ready to dive deep into some biblical scholarship today?
I am.
We're going to be checking out Dr. Mark Jennings's lecture on the Gospel of Mark.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just talking about some dusty old text here.
Right.
We're talking about a respected scholar who brings this history to life.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, we're zeroing in on the early part of Jesus's public ministry.
Okay.
Where sparks are already flying between him and the religious leaders.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how Dr. Jennings highlights these seemingly small conflicts, like arguments over fasting and Sabbath rules.
Right.
And shows how they actually reveal a ton about Jesus's growing authority.
Yeah.
And the radical changes he's bringing.
It is fascinating.
It's like, who knew a debate about snacks could shake up centuries of tradition? But that's what we're here to unpack.
Yeah.
So first up is fasting.
Okay.
Apparently there's some side-eye going on because John the Baptist's disciples and the Pharisees are fasting.
Right.
But Jesus's disciples are not, I mean, was there free food at Jesus's gatherings or something?
Well,
what's the deal?
Back then, fasting wasn't about trendy diets.
Right.
It was a serious act of devotion, a way to show your piety.
So
when Jesus's disciples aren't fasting, it's like they're breaking an unspoken code.
Okay.
The question posed to Jesus in Mark 2:18-20,
mm-hmm.
isn't just curious, it's a challenge to his leadership.
So there's some serious shade being thrown.
Yeah.
Like, hey, are your followers slacking off on their religious duties?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Jesus, being Jesus, doesn't get defensive. He throws back this brilliant analogy. Can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast.
Mm.
He's basically saying, look, we're celebrating here.
Right.
My presence is a cause for joy, not mourning.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Weddings are a time for feasting, not fasting.
Right.
But then he adds this twist.
Hmm.
The bridegroom will be taken away. It's almost like a shadow falls over the party.
Yeah.
Is this a hint about Jesus' future suffering and death?
It's hard not to see it that way.
Right.
It's like a subtle warning amidst the celebration.
Mm-hmm.
A reminder that things won't always be this joyful.
Okay.
Jesus is preparing his followers for a coming shift, a time of mourning that will eventually make way for something new.
Whoa, that adds a whole other layer to this seemingly simple answer about fasting.
Yeah.
It's like, enjoy the party while you can, folks, because things are about to get real.
Right. So, and that's precisely the setup for his next point.
Okay.
Jesus uses these vivid images of new cloth on old garments and new wine-bursting old wineskin.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying the new thing he brings is so radically different,
mm-hmm.
so potent, that it simply can't be contained by the old ways of doing things.
Okay, I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah.
First, the fasting thing. Joy over ritual. Now, this new wine analogy.
Yeah.
It's like Jesus is saying, forget patching up the old system. I'm bringing something completely new, something that demands a whole new way of thinking.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
And that's where things get really interesting for us today, right?
Right.
Think about times when you've had to adapt to a new way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Was it easy? Did it require a whole new mindset? That's what Jesus is demanding from his followers. And it's something we still grapple with today.
So we've got Jesus shaking things up with the fasting tradition.
Yeah.
Then hinting at a coming shift with that bridegroom analogy.
Right.
But the tension really ramps up in the next controversy.
Okay.
And it all starts with a few hungry disciples snacking in a grain field.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Okay, so we've got the Pharisees catching the disciples plucking grain on the Sabbath.
Right.
And they're not happy about it.
Not at all.
It might seem like a petty thing to us.
Uh-huh.
Like, really, you're going to debate over a handful of grain?
Yeah.
But to understand this conflict, we need to understand the weight the Sabbath held in their culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for them, it wasn't just a day off. It was a deeply sacred time with all sorts of rules and restrictions.
Exactly.
So the Pharisees see reaping grain as work. And work is forbidden on the Sabbath.
Right.
So for them, this isn't just about snacking.
No.
It's about obedience to the law.
Yeah.
It's a direct challenge to their whole system.
Mm-hmm.
So how does Jesus respond? Does he tell his disciples to put the snacks away and apologize?
He doesn't. He goes right back to the scriptures.
Uh-huh.
Using the example of King David and his men eating the consecrated bread when they were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brilliant move, really.
Okay.
He's using their own playbook against them.
Right.
Showing that even in their sacred texts,
yeah.
There are examples of need overriding ritual.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah.
It's like he's saying, look, you guys are obsessed with the rules.
Mm.
But even your own heroes bent them when necessary.
Right.
Look.
But then he takes it a step further.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where things get really profound.
Okay.
Jesus declares, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath.
Yeah.
It's this revolutionary statement completely flips the script on how they understand the Sabbath.
Instead of being this burden,
right,
this list of things you can't do,
uh-huh,
he's reframing it as a gift, something designed for human flourishing.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's not all.
Oh.
He goes on to say, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And this is where things get really interesting.
Hold on, rewind a bit.
Okay.
Son of Man, that phrase feels significant.
Mm-hmm.
But I need a little refresher on why it's such a big deal.
You're right to pick up on that.
Okay.
The title, Son of Man, isn't just about being human.
Right.
It's a direct link to the prophecy in Daniel.
Okay.
Where this figure gets incredible power and authority directly from God. Jesus using it here, that's a power move, claiming that same authority for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And not just any authority,
right,
but authority over the Sabbath itself.
So it's not just about interpreting the law correctly.
Right.
He's saying he has the power to redefine it.
That's exactly what he's saying.
Wow. That's bold, to say the least.
Yeah, it is.
So we've seen Jesus deflect challenges with clever arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Use scripture to back up his points.
Right.
And then, bam, he drops these bombshells that completely reframe everything.
Yeah.
No wonder things are about to get messy.
Right.
But before we dive into the next level of conflict,
right,
I think we need to unpack this whole Son of Man thing a bit more.
Yeah.
Because it seems pretty central to understanding who Jesus is and what he's claiming.
I agree. You're absolutely right. That title, Son of Man, it's key to understanding the whole story.
Right.
It's not just some like random phrase Jesus throws around.
Right.
It's loaded with meaning.
Yeah.
Connecting back to the book of Daniel, where this figure gets dominion and glory,
right,
representing God's ultimate power.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus uses it,
yeah,
he's not just saying, hey, I'm a regular guy.
Right.
He's claiming a level of authority that's, well, divine.
Okay, so it's not just a title, it's a statement.
Yes.
And a pretty bold one at that.
It is.
It's like he's saying, my authority doesn't come from the religious rules you cling to.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from something much higher.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And remember,
yeah,
this is all happening in the context of these escalating conflicts with the religious leaders.
Right.
Each clash,
yeah,
whether it's about fasting or Sabbath rules,
mm-hmm,
it's pushing them further apart,
mm-hmm,
highlighting the fundamental difference in how they understand God, authority,
right,
and even what it means to be faithful.
You know, it's interesting that so many of these conflicts we've talked about,
yeah,
revolve around food,
uh-huh,
fasting, snacking, mm-hmm, in the grain field,
yeah,
even that feast Jesus has with Levi the tax collector,
mm-hmm,
which, by the way, causes another uproar.
Yeah.
Because he's hanging out with the wrong crowd.
Right.
Is there something about food that makes it such a flashpoint for these challenges?
That's a great observation. And Dr. Jennings digs into that in his lecture.
Okay.
He points out that in Jewish culture,
uh-huh,
food wasn't just about filling your stomach.
Right.
It was deeply symbolic, tied to religious practices and social boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
What you ate, when you ate, who you ate with.
Yeah.
It all had meaning.
So it's like every meal was a chance to either uphold or challenge the established order.
Exactly. And by breaking those food-related rules,
yeah,
Jesus isn't just being a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a profound statement about what God's kingdom is really about.
Okay.
Think back to that wedding feast analogy.
Right.
It's not about deprivation or strict adherence to the letter of the law.
Uh-huh.
It's about abundance,
yeah,
joy, and welcoming everyone to the table.
So it's not just about the food itself. It's about what it represents. A new way of relating to God and to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's saying, forget the old rules.
Right.
Forget the social barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Come and experience the true feast of God's love.
And that message, as you can imagine, is pretty threatening to those in power.
Yeah.
They've built their whole system on these rules and distinctions.
Right.
And here comes Jesus turning everything upside down.
It's like he's shaking the foundations of their world.
Yes.
But speaking of foundations, Dr. Jennings points out something really interesting about how Jesus argues his case.
Okay.
Initially, he engages with the Pharisees on their own terms,
uh-huh,
using scripture and legal precedent.
Yeah.
Like a seasoned scholar.
Yes. Dr. Jennings argues that this is a deliberate strategy by demonstrating his mastery of their own system.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus establishes common ground
yeah.
and shows that he understands their concerns.
Okay.
He's not just dismissing them out of hand.
Yeah.
He's meeting them where they are.
It's like he's saying, okay, you want to play by the rules, let's play.
Yeah.
But then he changes the game entirely.
Exactly.
He doesn't just interpret the law.
Right.
He reinterprets it.
Exactly. He moves beyond simply citing precedent.
Okay.
And starts making these bold pronouncements about the very purpose of the law.
Uh-huh.
Like when he declares that the Sabbath was made for man, right. not the other way around.
Yeah.
Or when he claims authority over the Sabbath as the Son of Man,
mm-hmm.
he's shifting the whole conversation from a human level to a divine one.
Okay, so it's like he's saying, I'm not just debating with you.
Right.
I'm speaking with the authority of God himself.
Exactly. And that, as we've seen, is going to lead to some serious fireworks.
All right, so before we go there, I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the symbolism of food in Jewish culture.
Sure.
Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
Yeah.
What are some specific examples of how food was used to express social and religious boundaries?
Sure. For instance, there were strict rules about kosher foods.
Right.
What was considered clean and unclean to eat.
Uh-huh.
This wasn't just about hygiene. It was about maintaining a sense of ritual purity and separation from other cultures.
Okay.
Sharing a meal with someone was also a deeply significant act,
mm-hmm.
often implying acceptance and fellowship.
So when Jesus dines with tax collectors and sinners,
yes,
people who were considered outcasts by the religious elite,
uh-huh.
it's not just a friendly gesture.
No.
It's a deliberate challenge to their social norms.
Precisely. It's like he's saying God's love isn't limited by your narrow definitions of purity or worthiness.
Right.
Everyone is welcome at his table.
Okay.
And that, of course, is a radical message that flies in the face of the religious establishment's whole worldview.
Okay, so we've got this tension building between Jesus and the religious leaders.
Yeah.
Fueled by these symbolic clashes over food.
Right.
The Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus's bold claims of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you think things can't get any more heated.
Right.
Mark throws us a curveball.
He does.
It's not just the Pharisees who are questioning Jesus now.
Mm-hmm.
Even his own family gets involved.
Right. Mark 3:21 tells us that Jesus's family hears about the commotion he's causing.
Uh-huh.
And they come to take charge of him.
Right.
Thinking he's out of his mind.
Wow.
Imagine that. Your own family showing up.
Yeah.
Worried you've gone off the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks volumes about how radical Jesus's actions and teachings must have seemed.
It's like they're saying, hey, tone it down a bit.
Uh-huh.
You're rocking the boat too much.
And Jesus' response is fascinating.
Okay.
He doesn't back down or try to appease them.
Mm-hmm.
He doubles down on his message.
Right.
Declaring that those who do the will of God are his true family.
Wow.
It's this profound statement that redefines kinship.
Okay.
Shifting the focus from blood ties to spiritual connection.
So it's not about rejecting your family. It's about expanding the definition of family to include those who share your commitment to God's kingdom.
Exactly. And that's a radical concept that continues to challenge us today.
Yeah.
It forces us to ask,
mm-hmm.
where do our true loyalties lie?
Right.
Who are the people we consider our family and why?
Okay, so we've gone from debates over fasting to Sabbath controversies to this showdown with the religious leaders.
Yeah.
And now even Jesus's family is getting concerned.
Yeah.
Things are definitely heating up.
For sure.
Where does it go from here?
Right.
Because it feels like something's got to give. It's like you can practically feel the tension crackling in the air at this point in Dr. Jennings's lecture.
Right.
Like everyone's holding their breath,
yeah.
waiting to see what happens next.
Exactly. And what happens next is explosive.
Okay.
Dr. Jennings takes us into chapter 3 of Mark,
mm-hmm.
where things escalate dramatically.
Well,
it's not just grumbling and side-eye anymore.
Right.
We're talking accusations of demonic power and a full-blown showdown with the religious authorities.
Yeah, the volume of Jesus's miracles seems to be reaching like a fever pitch at this point.
It does.
He's casting out demons left and right,
mm-hmm.
healing the sick.
Yeah.
And the crowds are going wild.
Right.
But the Pharisees, they're not impressed.
Yeah, no.
In fact, they seem downright terrified.
They're caught in this impossible bind.
Right.
They can't deny the miracles are happening. Everyone's seeing them firsthand.
Uh-huh.
But they also refuse to accept that the power behind them could be from God.
Right.
So they come up with this, well, let's just say a pretty desperate explanation.
They accuse Jesus of being in league with the devil.
I know.
Like, seriously.
Right.
They're basically saying he's getting his power from Beelzebul, the ruler of demons.
Right.
Talk about a smear campaign. Mm. It's like, if we can't beat him,
yeah,
let's just label him as evil and hope everyone runs for the hills.
Classic. It's a classic power move, right? When you can't refute the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Attack the person's character.
Okay.
But Jesus isn't fazed.
Okay.
In fact,
yeah,
he dismantles their argument with this incredible blend of logic and wit, pointing out how utterly ridiculous their claim is.
So Dr. Jennings really emphasizes this point.
He does.
Jesus doesn't just defend himself.
Right.
He goes on the offensive.
He does.
He calls them out for their hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Their spiritual blindness.
It's like he's saying, you're so focused on maintaining your power and control that you've completely missed the point of what God is doing here.
Right.
And there's this undercurrent of warning, too.
Okay.
A sense that they're playing with fire by attributing God's work to the devil.
Okay.
It's a reminder that spiritual warfare is real and the stakes are incredibly high.
Okay, so we've got this dramatic confrontation with the religious leaders. Mm. Accusations are flying.
Yeah.
Jesus is calling them out left and right.
Yeah.
It's intense.
It is. But then Dr. Jennings points out this other layer of conflict that's unfolding simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
The tension within Jesus's own family.
Right. It's easy to overlook this detail amidst all the other drama.
Right.
But remember, Jesus's family had already tried to intervene earlier, thinking he was losing his mind.
Yeah.
Now, as his ministry becomes even more controversial, that tension seems to be escalating. Mm. They're watching him challenge the most powerful religious figures of their time.
Yeah.
And they're understandably worried about the consequences.
I can imagine, like, the whispers and worried glances. Like, is this really worth it? What are you doing to yourself, to our family?
And you can't help but wonder how that must have felt for Jesus.
Right.
To have the people closest to you, the ones who are supposed to love and support you unconditionally.
Right.
Doubting your mission.
Yeah.
Your sanity, even.
It's a stark reminder that following God's call isn't always easy.
It's not.
It can put you at odds with the world. And sometimes, even with those you love most.
And yet, in the face of all this opposition from the religious elite, from his own family, Jesus doesn't waver.
Right.
He doesn't compromise his message to appease anyone.
Right.
Instead, he draws a line in the sand, declaring that those who do the will of God are his true family.
It's this incredibly powerful statement about where our true allegiance lies.
It is.
It's not about blood ties or social expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's about aligning ourselves with God's purpose, even when it costs us everything.
And that's a challenge that resonates throughout history, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who are we willing to stand with even when it's unpopular, even when it puts us at odds with our own tribe?
So we've journeyed through these early chapters of Mark with Dr. Jennings as our guide.
We have.
Witnessing the growing conflict, the escalating tension, the clash of worldviews. As we reach the end of this deep dive, what stands out to you as the most significant takeaway?
For me, it's the way these early chapters lay the groundwork for everything that follows.
Okay.
They introduce us to the core themes of Jesus's ministry, his radical authority, his unwavering compassion, his willingness to challenge the status quo, and the inevitable conflict that arises when truth confronts power.
And it all circles back to that central question, who is Jesus and what does his authority mean for us?
Such a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Jennings has given us a lot to chew on.
Yes.
It's not just about understanding a historical figure or a set of religious beliefs. It's about wrestling with the implications of Jesus's claims for our own lives.
Yeah.
Our own choices, our own understanding of what it means to follow God.
Absolutely. These are questions that have resonated throughout history.
Right.
And they continue to challenge us today.
Yeah.
As we encounter Jesus in the pages of Mark's gospel,
we're
invited to confront our own assumptions, to grapple with the implications of his claims, and ultimately to decide where we stand in relation to his authority.
This has been a truly eye-opening deep dive into the Gospel of Mark.
It has been.
A huge thanks to Dr. Mark Jennings for providing such rich and thought-provoking material.
Yes, thank you.
And to you, listener.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this journey.
I appreciate it.
We hope you've gained some fresh perspectives on this ancient text and discovered some aha moments of your own.
Yeah.
Keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
And until next time, keep diving deep.